Trump got the full 2020 experience.
Got COVID, got fired, got evicted.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
Salutations, my people, and happy Monday, and welcome back to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can access that live stream every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can do so by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. On today's show, we're going to welcome back our very own amazing, like, neighbor from across the way, Patrick Dunn, the executive director of the New Haven Pride Center, will be joining us on the second half of the show after the break. My name is Tom, and as always, I'm here with my amazing co-host, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
And
good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to
The Dish.
Yes, we got it. Finally. It's been a while.
Chris is here. So.
That's true.
I am.
Welcome back. Welcome back, darling.
I stayed here last night.
I know. I was like, it's the only way I'm going to make sure that you come on the show. And so, he sort of kind of marinated on my couch all day while I worked. And so,
I was watching the dogs.
Yeah. Oh, well, that too, and Family Guy and all the other things.
It's American Dad.
American Dad.
But I was mainly watching
educational stuff. It was one of those dads. He's into daddies. Who knew?
I was mainly watching educational television.
Okay. What television were you watching?
Yeah. CNN.
Yeah, CNN.
Yeah.
Lots of CNN, as always. Hi, Jess. Speaking of CNN. Okay.
That's right. That's Jess Brandis?
Yeah.
Jess.
She and I both love CNN.
I know.
But and Jess, how pretty is Brooke Baldwin? She'll get back to me.
Of course. No, Jess Brandis actually was doing a lot of celebratory episodes as a result of the final announcement that Joe Biden indeed got the nomination, right? We left it during our election episode, we left it that we didn't know who the winner was.
And correct my memory, she doesn't live in Philly, right?
She does.
She does live in Philly. Yes. So thank you, Jess, and all of your other Philadelphians or whatever.
Because she's like, I didn't vote.
But that's really what put us over. I mean, we were watching Philadelphia. We were watching that area.
You have to look at all of the dynamics that played out and all of the people that really made significant, strides in getting people to the polls. And, you know, the state of Pennsylvania really saved our fucking asses. But we would be remiss to not mention the fact that Stacey Abrams worked her fucking ass off to get us, where we are in a state like Georgia. Right? And
do you think Pennsylvania actually saved our ass? I think we would have won either way.
It was the deciding factor that put us over.
It was either Arizona and Nevada or just Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And Pennsylvania, with its 20 electoral votes, put us where we needed to be. Mm-hmm. A lot sooner than having to wait for them to call Nevada and Arizona, right?
And they've still yet to call. Well, some networks have still yet to call Arizona.
Right. So we're just trying to figure out where that lands. So we've got a lot of things that we want to talk about today. A lot of, LGBTQ movement within the political atmosphere, and we're super excited to talk about that as well. So I'm going to just talk briefly with my boys here of what we did, how we celebrated this amazing Biden-Harris win. It was very historic. We collectively haven't slept for like 4 days at that point, right? Because we didn't know who the winner was going to be until things were sort of kind of sorted out. And Saturday at 11:24.
We were watching MSNBC like a movie.
Seriously. Like we just sat there like, so you had come over, when was it?
Friday night.
And we were like, oh yeah, we're just going to watch a movie. And it just ended up being MSNBC.
Mm-hmm. At one point you were like, is this the movie we're going to watch? I was like, maybe.
Who knows the ending?
I'm like, I just want them to call a state. Right.
And we knew that we weren't going to get results on Friday night. It didn't happen until Saturday.
Part of me thought that maybe we were going to get some results on Friday night, but it didn't end up happening, of course.
Well, you know, there's a lot of dynamics that play in when you're doing mail-in voting. You know, when you think about the scale in which we participate in the mail-in voting process, along with the provisionary ballots and things like that, ballots from our troops that come in later than election day that should be counted. It really throws a wrench in trying to figure out, in close races like this, who the next president is going to be.
Right.
It's so funny. It was so close in so many states, but he won the popular vote by over 4 million. That's right. Crazy.
And it's expected to continue to grow.
Right.
As votes are still coming in.
Because think about it. States like California, they're not done counting their votes yet. California is still counting. No, but
they went
blue. Right, exactly. But California at the moment is still at the upper 89%. That's right. All it is, 89% right now of the vote it is in. So.
The entire West Coast, which, by the way, I want to just say a quick hello to my friend Paul. He's one of our amazing supporters of the Pride at Avangrid initiative that we have going on at work to promote diversity in our workplace. He's watching. And so I just wanted to say hi. He's on the West Coast.
The camera.
Yeah, or just like block that out.
Yeah.
No, but the thing is, he's on the West Coast. So the thing is, as soon as I think it was the 11 o'clock hour on the East Coast, 8 o'clock their time, right? 11?
Yeah, 10, 3 hours.
Yep. Immediately at 8 p.m., it's like, boom. It's like Oregon, Washington, California, blue.
Yeah, right away.
No reporting, no nothing. But
it was 0% in.
I know.
on each of the three states.
We're going to call it.
Yeah.
It was awesome. We enjoyed ourselves trying to like see things coming in, and then the suspense started when it started getting very close. But anyway, jumpstart to Saturday. Saturday, we got here. Initially, it was just Trish and I, mm-hmm. right? We were going to be the only ones just hanging out. We were going to set up outside. I set up this little screen with yep. my iPad and a big-ass speaker so that we can listen to every word of Kamala Harris and Biden. And next thing you know, it turned into Chris came over. Our friend Jose was here.
Chris wasn't here.
No, you weren't here?
Not on Friday.
Oh, no, you were working.
I was working.
No, Saturday.
Saturday.
I was working.
Yeah. Yeah, she was working. She wasn't here. See, it goes to show you how I was.
Apparently.
your Steve came over.
He's right? Not mine.
Well, I mean, he's one of your Steves.
Yeah.
So, he sat here with us on election day as well. And we had champagne. We did Biden burgers on the grill. Mm-hmm. We had potato chips and all that good stuff. We really celebrated, and we were happy. I think overall, that was exactly the news that we needed to hear. After 4 long years, it was what we needed. I think so. So anyway, we did tell you that this election came with a wave of LGBTQ folks that got elected either into national politics or local politics. And our good friend Chris here has a story. He's going to go over some of the names that were elected during this particular season. So, to you, Chris.
Absolutely. So, as we know, Saturday was a great day of hope. It was a win, a big win. Unfortunately, we did not get that foreseen blue wave that we had expected, but we did. 2020 did see a rainbow wave.
Right.
So I'm going to read this. This is coming from The Advocate. While the top prize was still unconfirmed on election night, obviously, it went on for a couple days, 2020 saw a new rainbow wave of LGBTQ+ victories. There were nearly 600 out candidates on the ballot. 312 of those were endorsed by the LGBTQ Victory Fund. And so far, probably a little bit more now, about 160 of the Victory Fund endorsed candidates have won their races.
Right.
And this is back when they were saying 95 of the races involving the Victory Fund candidates remained undecided. So we are going to see that number go up if it hadn't already. So I did just want to give a quick rundown of some of those. This is about 31 names on here. There are multiple other candidates that have succeeded in either their first race or re-election or getting back into politics. But I definitely thought it would be great if we could shine some light on some of our brothers and sisters.
It's what we do best.
Exactly. Who fought so hard and really rallied the support of our community and those outside our community or allies to really push them into the positions that they worked so hard to gain. So we're going to start with Angie Craig. I'm just going to say the name and the office that they were elected to. Angie Craig, elected to the U.S. House from Minnesota. Kim Jackson, the Georgia State Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Chevron Jones, the Florida State Senate. Mondaire Jones, New York's 17th Congressional District.
Right.
Richie Torres, New York's 15th Congressional District.
He is the first Afro-Latino.
Mm-hmm. Latinx.
Latinx. Elected into office in the state of New York, which is amazing.
And I believe it's the first congressman. Is it of New York? No, it just says history as one of the first. Okay, so first for New York,
right,
and one of the first nationwide. And then we go to Sarah McBride, Delaware State Senate. We had actually talked about her, I believe, on election night.
That's right.
With Delaware, yes. Michelle Rayner, Florida's House of Representatives. Tori Harris, Tennessee's House of Representatives.
Tennessee. Imagine that. Mm.
They actually gained two in Tennessee. Jabari Brisport of New York State Senate. Stephanie Byers, Kansas House of Representatives. Charmaine McGuffey, she's the Hamilton County, Ohio sheriff who had beat her former boss in the Democratic primary and then defeated Bruce Hoffbauer, the Republican for that position. Very few have gotten elected to the office of sheriff across the nation. So right. Good for her. Sam Park, the Georgia House of Representatives. Taylor Small, Vermont's House of Representatives. Greg Razor, Missouri State Senate. Eddie Manis, Tennessee's House of Representatives. He's the other one.
Tennessee is coming through.
And this is he's the one who was elected along with the name I had mentioned before, Tori Harris. Now, Eddie Manis, though, was a Republican, but still a brother and sister in our community.
Right.
And Tennessee pushed him to serve on their house. Alex Lee, the California State Assembly. Tierra Mack, Rhode Island State Senator.
Yes, yeah,
that's right.
That's right in our own backyard.
That's right. Chris Pappas, also in our backyard. U House.
Wait. Sorry, I missed that last one. What?
Chris Pappas,
Tierra Mack, Rhode Island.
Oh, okay.
Our neighbors. Yes.
Right.
Also, one of our closer neighbors, Chris Pappas, from the U.S. House, for the U.S. House from New Hampshire. So another win in our area. David Siciline. I think it's Siciline. I recognize him. He was reelected.
It's okay. You tried.
Exactly. U.S. House from also Rhode Island. Mark Takano, U.S. House from California. He became the first gay person of color in Congress from Southern California, I believe it was. He's of Japanese descent. Mark Pokin, U.S. House from Wisconsin. Adrian Tam, Hawaii House of Representatives. Brianna Titone, Colorado's House of Representatives.
Yes, Colorado.
That's right. Maureen Turner, Oklahoma's House of Representatives. Ann Johnson, Texas House of Representatives.
Imagine
some more
that.
Good things coming out of Texas. We're going to be keeping our eye on Texas a lot
in the future.
Texas, Georgia, certain states that really have
so many gays are moving there.
Yeah, well.
That is true. I know a lot that are planning to.
So
I want to go back really quick. So did you talk about Charmaine McGuffey?
Yes.
Okay. What is amazing about her election was she was fired or demoted because she was lesbian.
Right.
And then took the sheriff's job from the person who then demoted her.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that woman deserves way more than just accolades. She gets clapped. 100%. Like, holy crap.
Yay.
Amazing. And then also in the state of Connecticut, I don't know if you brought this up, but District 2, Connecticut House of Representatives, I'm going to say it wrong, Raghibib Ali Brennan, he won the Connecticut House of Representatives District 2 as a Democrat, as a gay man.
Right, that's awesome.
Yeah, and that's here.
Yeah,
right in our backyard.
That's right
and,
here in Connecticut.
You know, also another elected official in the state of Connecticut that got reelected by a landslide over 80% of the vote was, of course, our very own local politician here, Jeff Curry. He got reelected to his seat representing the city or town of West Hartford. So that's super amazing. Congratulations to him. Overall,
and Rosa DeLauro.
Of course, she's one of our like biggest advocates, and we love her for her just overall craziness. I think that she
came
makes
to New Haven Pride.
Right. She makes crazy look amazing. I love her. Like she's like she has like this aura about her. She's very eclectic. She's almost very like gypsyish. Right?
Gypsy-ish?
Gypsy-ish. You're right. Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm speaking cursive already.
It's going to be a long night.
We only had two shots.
Meetings.
Two meetings, yes. Board meetings. But I love her aura. I love how she is for the people. She fights on a daily basis. She's not afraid to show up and support local organizations and things that are happening. For example, like our pride that we had. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a huge pride, but nonetheless, it was a very appropriate pride for COVID. But overall, it's just fantastic to see the rainbow wave that we have continued to build on since 2018, mm-hmm. right? Virginia in 2018 fucking hit it out of the park.
Right.
When you think about Danica Rowan, one of the first transgender females to ever be elected to state legislature, it happened in mm-hmm. Virginia. Mm-hmm. They had 7 other people, I believe, in the LGBT community that were elected to local offices within that state. And, you know, and then there, of course, there's still freaking Waffle House Kim.
Oh, God.
Right. And people are still supporting and backing this woman. And for those who you don't know, it's her name.
Kim Davis.
Kim Davis. Thank you. Who Arkansas? Denied.
I want to send Queer Eye to her. Like, just go.
She
figure
needs
it out.
Something. She needs more than just Queer Eye.
Was it Missouri?
She just the whole freaking rainbow. No, I thought she was from
I thought it was
Kentucky.
Oh, is it Kentucky? I thought it was Arkansas.
It's Kentucky. Yeah, Rowan County.
Yeah, Rowan County. That's it. Yep.
Yeah. So, but anyway, overall, it was really, really an amazing time to be LGBTQ plus in politics mm-hmm. this time around. And it's only going to get bigger and better, right?
And a lot of times, some of these names that I've been going over, this is a re-election from the blue wave of the midterms in 2018.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them were entrusted into the office. Enough people believed in them. And not only did they believe in them, they proved themselves.
Right.
They weren't just believed in. They worked those 2 years under such a harsh and rhetoric-filled administration, and they came out victorious.
It's like, it reminds me of that meme that we were reading all over throughout the past, 5 or 6 days before they ever called the freaking election. There was a meme going around, you want to get these ballots counted up in Pennsylvania, get a whole group of gay people, buy them some freaking, I think it was Starbucks. Man, them shits will be counted like that. That's because they want to go out and party afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Done. It'll be done in one night.
I mean, somebody said to me, we can count over, 1 million votes on American Idol in
130 million?
Yeah,
right.
In 30 minutes. But when it comes to the election, we can't.
Right.
But anyway.
Well, I mean, it's a big difference when you're counting by phone calls, like registering phone calls versus having to unfold a paper ballot,
set it aside.
And also check. Yeah, I know, it was a joke. This. But it is important to point that out because so many people were getting stressed and frustrated over it. That, these have to be inspected personally, but then they go through a machine. It's not someone who's sitting there and just tallying it and can be like, oh yeah, Biden, 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 Biden. There's a couple Trump ones. We'll count those for Biden. That's not how it works. That's not how it works.
That's why I didn't work the election.
No, but there's people from both parties, right? Two people are doing things so that one can watch the other do and make sure that the vote is right.
Right.
And that the vote is fair and transparent.
Illegal. Yeah, exactly. It's very transparent. Very transparent.
So,
and also, please.
No.
Well, it's also important to show that certain states, for instance, when you look at Ohio and then you look at Pennsylvania, this is the best examples. Ohio began their vote with the mail-in ballots. So that's why Ohio started so blue and then over time
turned red.
Started to turn red because they began with their mail-in votes and then went to election day votes. Whereas in Pennsylvania, their state law or the Commonwealth law states that you have to begin with counting election day votes, which is why it became very deep red and Trump was ecstatic. But then as those troves of mail-in ballots came in, those were predominantly an exponential rate Democratic votes.
Right.
Those were the ones supporting Biden. So he just saw his what he believed was a victory just get washed away.
Well, I can tell you this much. So in theory, there are no red or blue states, right? Because land doesn't vote. We know this. People vote. And when you think about the amount of people that live in the city of New York, for example, and the city of LA and cities like Houston and Dallas and Miami and all of these massive urban centers, it's like if we were to get rid of the Electoral College, I don't think that we would have barely any Republican presidents.
Right. And that's why one of the reasons the Electoral College was put into the Constitution by our founding fathers. They didn't want to have the risk of the majority of people just running the nation. They wanted it to be more more equal representation mm-hmm. statewise right. by population.
Right, but I mean, then you jump into the other aspect of that is that a person that lives in a state with 540 like inhabitants, like for example, one of the North Dakota, I think it's North Dakota, has like over 548 like people total.
Definitely got more than 500 people in North
Look it
Dakota.
Up. I swear, it's like in the 560,000s.
Oh, you said thousands this time. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't hear the thousand part. I was like, there's more than 550 people.
560,000 okay. people okay. in the state.
I missed the thousand part. I was
762.
Like,
well, five, six, seven, same difference. But my point is, it's like when you think about the 700 and what? 62,000 people that live there, their vote has more weight than the 9.5 million people that live in the city of New York, right? As a state. But, I mean, they only have three electoral college votes. But nonetheless, their vote has more weight per capita, being that they're such a big state with such a small population versus a big state with a lot of people. And so it's a catch 22, and eventually we'll get to fixing it, mm-hmm. but today's not that day.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, Nick, being that we're on the political spectrum, we're still talking about politics, we're still talking about LGBTQ like advancement. Why don't you tell us what's happening in the state of Nevada?
I didn't finish the list yet.
Oh, you're not done?
No.
Well, hold on. What about Nevada? Why?
But anyway. That's under my stuff, but that's. That's what he's talking about. Oh, anyway, okay. That's okay. So
wait, before you go on to that, I want to. You're talking about victories, and that's great. But we only have like 8 more minutes before we have to go to break, and I want to talk about Mitch McConnell winning and beating Amy McGrath.
Right,
right.
Which was fucking horrible. So sad he's back, but we have a runoff election in Georgia.
That's right.
Two,
and that is what we need to be paying attention to right now. So we have
right.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say we should finish the list, and then we can get into a different topic.
All right, go.
I don't want to cut these people short as we were...
Finish your list,
yes,
dog.
I would like to finish the list because these
people... How many more
were,
names do you have?
We're not far from it, all right? I said right. I only had a couple more. So this is Allison Dale of North Carolina House of Representatives, Sharice Davids, U.S. House from Kansas, Jill Rose Quinn... County or Cook County, Illinois judge, which is great. David Ortiz, Colorado House of Representatives.
Christy, is he related to me?
Probably no. not. Yeah. Christy Maybe. Holsteg, Palm Springs, California mayor. So that's a nice office to win. And then the last one, if that's okay, if I finish, is that all right with you guys? If I finish,
yes, go for it.
Okay, last but certainly not least, Jessica Benham, the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. Interesting. This girl has overcome so much adversity, obviously. She is the first out LGBTQ plus woman elected to the Pennsylvania state legislature. She also has, she's bisexual and also is autistic. So she must have had to leap through so many hurdles, and congratulations for you.
Seriously.
Like breaking history in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Claps for her. All right. So, Trish.
Go ahead now,
going your way.
All right, so now it's my turn?
It's your turn.
Well, I wanted to, shed light on the list that we were talking about. Also, there are many more, but
sorry,
those are
I thought you were
about.
Done because we, like, totally...
Yeah, I'm used to that.
I can get out with these two.
Can we go on break? All right, so we have two runoffs in Georgia, which
That's right.
is important. So that means there's going to be a revote, and that revote starts on December 14th?
No, January 5th.
So the...
Early voting starts on December 14th.
To request.
Okay, so there are...
Right. So early you can request a mail-in ballot starting today. Early voting starts on December 14th. Yes. Right.
Okay. So we have, for Republicans, Kelly Loeffler mm-hmm. and David Perdue. Right.
And Kelly Loeffler wasn't even...
Waffler? Is that going to be...
I said Loeffler.
I thought I heard Waffler.
No.
But I can take
and
Waffler.
She was appointed by Donald Trump, by the way.
That's right. Well, actually, she can't be appointed
and then for
to the Senate.
Democrats,
she was appointed by the governor of
the governor, excuse me. I okay. said the president. Sorry.
So for Democrats, we have Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff.
That's right.
Now, Tom, I want you to talk a little bit about what that means if those two win or if at least one wins.
Okay. So right now we have two uncalled races in the state of Alaska and another state, which are two Republican seats. Currently, there are four seats right now which are not called for. Two of them are the runoff seats in the state of Georgia, and the other two are secured Republican seats that once they tally the votes, we know they're going to get them. So what happens? In the state of Georgia, because none of these actual candidates reach 50%, it automatically goes into a runoff, which we've already explained.
For the top two candidates of each seat.
Of each seat, correct. So two Democrats are actually running, and what this means is that if they win these seats, the Republicans will have 50 seats in the Senate. And if they win these two seats, the Democrats have 50 seats in the Senate. So that's an even keel. And because we now have Joe Biden, Kamala Harris coming into the White House, if there's ever a need to have a tiebreaker, then Kamala Harris can come in and put in the tiebreaking vote, mm-hmm. which means that we would have control of the Senate. And that is important because all of the things that this horrible monster did for the past 4 years can be undone if we have control of the House, the Senate, and a Democratic president in office. So to my fellow Democrats and to my fellow gay people and to all of those who take interest in Senate races, make sure
you move now
that you encourage your friends in the state of Georgia to go out and do what they need to do to get these two individuals into the Senate of the U.S.
And there's something that those who do not preside in Georgia, such as us and such as Tom and I have done, I'm sure Trish maybe has done, but we can like support these campaigns, right. You know, go to Act Blue or go to their individual candidates' websites. We can pour in some money to really help push them over the line because Joe Biden can go so far with executive orders, but to have it done legislatively mm-hmm. is really closer to solidifying really what we're working for. So if we can get Congress, if we can get the Senate to 50-50
right.
with Kamala's tie-breaking vote, we can get so much done to better our nation.
And so keep in mind, Republicans know how important this is.
Oh, absolutely.
They know how important it is to have a majority in the Senate because they can block everything the House tries to do. So they're going to be pumping money. The private sector, these people who are looking to have interest or influence in the Senate will pump millions of dollars into the two opposing candidates. So we need to do our best as a grassroots organization to help them out. Maybe if it's $5 a week for each candidate or whatever you can, just do what you need to do. I'm going to try to find the links and we'll post it on tonight's post on where you can go and find more information on each one of those Democratic candidates. But we need to act.
It's so important.
But also, it's important to, for me, what I did today was I followed both of them on social media so I could learn a little bit more about them. Because honestly, I was not following the Senate race in Georgia as closely as I should have been.
Mm-hmm.
But now that we have a runoff, right? It's now important to educate ourselves. Right. So don't just throw money at something. Educate yourself about the candidate before
Absolutely.
You just start giving money.
Absolutely. And also look back into, I don't know too much about Loeffler, but look into Purdue's past. And you can kind of get some examples of why this man should no longer be serving
Purdue
in the U.S.
Purdue was the one that was selling his stock as soon as he found out that COVID was going to hit mm-hmm. back in January before the president or mm-hmm. anyone in his team ever even said or acknowledged the fact that this was real.
Yeah, so before you think these Republicans are fiscally conservative for the country, they're conservative for their own walls.
Oh, 100%.
Right.
And I would donate to John Ossoff either way because
he's on.
So cute.
All right, well, listen, guys, it has been a lovely conversation. The first half of the show, of course, flies by. Like, time flies when you're on Prozac. But we do have a guest that's coming
on. Are you on Prozac?
A little bit. Okay. I mean, after the week we've had, honey, I need something to slow me the fuck down. It doesn't even work, right? So listen, we do have a guest. So we are going to leave you with some music. And when we come back, Patrick Dunn from the New Haven Pride Center will join us. Here we go.
She was waiting by the back door, said, babe, we gotta leave town. Get your shit, get your suitcase, your dog, your guitar, cause we gotta go now, cause they're coming. Well, they know our fucking names, yes, they're coming, just the same. Well, I know you don't want to leave your life, you've
had some blood and tears, little joy, little strife, but they're coming. Well, they're coming down the road. Yes, they're coming, truth be told. They got a knapsack full of judgment, hypocrisy and lies, and they're talking so much hateful bullshit they've begun to gather flies. But they're coming, well, don't look them in the eyes. Yes, they're coming, no surprise. And we saw terror in our past. How are you so surprised it's come to bite you in the ass? Yes, it's coming. Well, it's nipping at your heels. Yes, it's coming for the kill. And don't forget the whiskey, and don't forget your history. It was never the land to sell or trade. Get on that train, head out to the wastelands where we can change our names. Cause they're coming, well, they know our fucking names. Yes, they're coming, just the same.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gents. From the break, that, of course, was Wastelands, the title track album to Amanda Barrett's album, Wastelands. It was released on July 31st. It is available on all the music streaming services. Make sure you check her out. She's an amazing LGBTQ artist all the way from the West Coast. I believe she is in Utah, right? That's where...
Yep.
Oh, my God. I cannot
believe... Linda Stay.
Thank you. Yep. Linda Stay. She's the daughter of Linda Stay, which we've had on the show and we love. Anyway... get the album. Awesome spoken word album. It's great. Right now, though, is, of course, our guest. Joining us is none other than Patrick Dunn, the executive director of the New Haven Pride Center. He's joining us to talk about all the amazing things that are happening amidst COVID. Patrick, welcome back.
Hey, y'all. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, Patrick. How are you?
I'm good. How are you all?
We are wonderful, excited to have you back and grace us with your presence, even if it's virtual, to talk about all the great things that are happening at the New Haven Pride Center.
I know, I miss all y'all's faces. It's been like a million years.
Right, right. So Patrick, first and foremost, before we go into what you're doing at the Pride Center, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm feeling much better since the weekend.
I think we all are.
I said recently to somebody that I feel like working and living and running a nonprofit during COVID is like living in a constant state of exhaustion and stress. I actually said today to someone that like running a nonprofit during COVID is like a whole new circle of hell. Mm-hmm. Just because there's so much stress and you know, running a nonprofit that specifically is here to serve the community is so overwhelming sometimes because there's this burden of if I mess something up and something goes wrong that the center closes, I've like screwed the entire community out of something that they need desperately right now. And it's like there's always that pressure there in general, but like amidst COVID, it's that pressure is like 20 times bigger. You know, because when we have people calling us and saying like, I'm homeless and I'm being turned away from the shelter because they have a list of 300 people and they told me that they haven't housed anyone since June. What do I do? You know, when we're getting calls from people who are like, I lost my job in March and I still don't have income and I've run out of all my savings. You know, it's things like that. And then, you know, all the, like, I got a call from someone today who I used to do aerial acrobatics with, and she's a teacher, and she had a student that's like 8 come out of the closet to her as non-binary in a home that doesn't accept it. And it's being homeschooled because that's their only option. It's like, you know, there's, I don't know, there's just like so much pressure right now in ways that there is, that's like personified. So that was a long-winded way of me saying I'm okay.
Well, I mean, Patrick, not for nothing. I mean, given all of the challenges that COVID has presented to organizations like yours, you know, shows like ours, and people all around this country, you guys hit the ground running. I mean, when COVID hit in the midst of right when it started, like, really getting crazy, you guys went out of your way to do food drives, to do online content, which you're still doing, mm-hmm. but you guys really like engage the community in a virtual way that let it be known that you were still there, right? And that you weren't going anywhere, which is a lot harder to do than actually say, right? Because you still need funding. You need, mm-hmm. you still need to go out there and make money, mm-hmm. and to be able to provide these services. How was those first two initial months when things got really crazy?
It was insane. So we collectively as a staff opted to stay open as long as possible. So we elected to all work out of the center and continue services in person until March 25th. Right. We only, and for the record, for anybody listening, Connecticut officially enacted a kind of forced closure on the 13th of March. So we stayed open about another 2.5 weeks. And the only reason we actually really closed in person was our building told us we could not come in any longer. Mm-hmm. So our building management company said, we are shutting down the building. You have to be out in 2 days, basically. And so we spent 2 days to figure it out. So we physically closed our office on March 25th. On March 26th, our telehealth was online, fully functional. And we had our first virtual program on March 29th, which was LGBTQ women in politics. And it was a discussion with, the first openly bisexual, woman to serve public office openly. She happens to also be a legislator in Connecticut, but it was actually, she was nationally the first. And one of the founders of the Women's March Connecticut, who is a queer woman. And then from there, it just kind of, we just rolled and churned out, you know, our first 6 weeks, we were really focused on self-care because we knew people were scared. We knew people were alone. You know, I always say that one of the most defining moments for me when I looked at how we were going to do what we were going to do and ultimately did was Maya, who is on our team, wrote the line for one of our emails that we were sending out, homophobia and transphobia thrive in isolation. And it was this like defining moment for us as a staff to realize like we have no other option but to succeed, and we have no other option but to be here for the community every way possible. And so within those first 6 weeks, we commissioned a LGBTQ plus coloring book that was completely free to download. You can actually still download it from our website. We commissioned, I think it was 10 different, maybe even more, local LGBTQ plus artists. We paid them all to create coloring book pages for us. We immediately moved into action to creating these online discussion forums that we started on Zoom, and then as we got more professional, moved to StreamYard and actually had streaming software. And then it just kind of took off from there.
Can you expand a little bit on the concept of thriving in isolation? I mean, it makes sense to me, but for our listeners, what does that
sure.
mean?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, thriving in isolation means that, you know, we've put 65,000 pounds of food in people's hands. We've given more than $35,000 out to LGBTQ artists and speakers who are under or completely unemployed right now because their main source of income was their art or their speaking gigs, and those evaporated came March 13th. It's being able to pay all the employees and having not lost a single employee during the entire process, and in fact, having hired 2 new staff members since COVID began. It's about listening to the community and responding. And when somebody says, like, I need this, trying to figure out how we do that. So whether that's figuring out how we make the SNAP benefit application process or the unemployment process easier, helping find people find housing. And when we don't have the answer, reaching out to partners around the state who we know the answers better than we do. And really, like, overnight having to learn how to succeed and doing it stopping.
Have you found that you're getting a lot of people reaching out to you because they are in homophobic or transphobic environments that they now have to quarantine in and they can't get out of and they don't know what to do?
Yes, especially from youth. So one of the things that happened almost instantly was when we went virtual, our youth program officer, Ala, basically all of her programs reverted into this one-on-one support for these kids that would reach out to her and be like, I live in a home and I'm trans and my parents don't know and I don't know what to do because school was the only place that my friends called me by the right name. Or I'm, you know, getting ready to go to college and I don't know what I'm going to do if I have to be online because I can't live in this environment any longer. And so, you know, there was so much of that one-on-one. And the other thing that happened was we had a lot of people call us that were lonely. Mm-hmm. They were home alone. I mean, it's true for me. I didn't see anyone in person for like 5 weeks because I live alone. I don't have a pet. I don't have, like, I saw my parents on Zoom a couple times. I, you know, saw the staff on Zoom, you know, once a week. And other than that, I was home alone 24/7. Mm-hmm. And like, for me, as someone who's like constantly doing something, constantly around people, it was horrifying. Mm-hmm. I remember when I got a quarantine relationship. I met my boyfriend. I knew my boyfriend before COVID, but we had our first date during COVID. And he was the first person I saw in person from the time we shut down the center until our first date. And he was the only person I saw in person until May 23rd. And it was like, it was such a lifeline, and understanding that, like, how much of a lifeline that was for me, we tried to recreate that in every way we possibly could. And our warm line became this call place that people would call to say, I'm home alone and I just need someone to talk to for 10 minutes to hear another human's voice on the other line that's not over Skype and not over Zoom and not over work. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, that's what we had to do.
Yeah, and so the New Haven Pride Center has been doing a lot of this amazing work and like being there and being supportive, whether it's virtual or over the phone. Have mm-hmm. you found that around Connecticut, around the country, a lot of Pride Centers are pivoting in the way that you are? Because I know that not only are you pivoting, you know, and keeping all your employees and bringing more people on, but you're actually, the Pride Center's doing okay, you know? Like, you're doing all right. So do you think that around the country, Pride Centers are kind of pivoting in the right way? Are people being supported around the country? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's tricky because there's also so many different experiences people are having, right? Like, if you're in Midwest Kentucky, your experience of COVID and shutdowns are very different than New Haven, Connecticut, for example. Or if you're like the Gay Men's Health Crisis Center in New York, your experience is, I mean, they're not even allowed to take public transit to their offices, right? Like the employees. So it's just, it's hard to compare because it's almost oranges and apples, even if all you're doing is going down the road. I think that we have positioned ourselves very well in how we have done our pivoting. I think that, you know, we have been fortunate to work with some of our peers, someone who, for example, I have so much admiration for Kimora and Kimora's Cultural Corner in Hartford, who they're a Black Afrocentric queer space. And they, very similar to us, have just been pumping out virtual programming because they knew they couldn't do anything that they did in person, which was a vital lifeline to Black and Brown communities of Greater Hartford. And ultimately what it's resulted in is they've grown their network and they're known now nationally. You know, they recently got written up in The Advocate because what they're doing, like The Advocate magazine, because what they're doing is now being seen everywhere because they went virtual so fast. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what's happening with us too. You know, we some of our virtual programming is getting national level attention. We just got a write-up in ANU magazine, which is one of the oldest HIV positive magazines in the country, about our World AIDS Day program that we're doing. We commissioned a multimedia performance program, which will be streamed live for free on World AIDS Day. And it's a commission using dance, multimedia production and composition, music composition. You know, and things like that, you know, being this virtual world, we're getting this national exposure.
Right.
Now, you know, many partners and peers of ours around the country are pivoting in every way they possibly can. We were really lucky. Our gala was the last major event to happen in the state of Connecticut before closure.
Right.
All of our peers, including in Connecticut, their galas happened after the fact.
Right.
And we saw a massive decline in support, but like for... I think the statistic was something like 75% of the centers around the country lost their gala, lost their major fundraising event that raised anywhere between, you know, 50 to 100,000 to even more for some of these organizations, and was vital money for their existence, right? And so their pivot is very different from ours because we started it in a different place. We had just had this huge infusion of cash, which allowed us to ride a wave. You know, we tried really hard not to ask anyone for money in the community because we knew everybody was hurting. And it allowed us to create this vacuum of space where we were just putting out resources, putting out money, and not necessarily having to ask people to support us because we did get that big infusion right before this happened, which unfortunately is not the case with so many of our peers. The Centerlink, which is the national kind of community center group, has also been vital during this process. You know, they did these big fundraisers with like the cast of Chorus Folk. They did a big reunion with them and that raised several million dollars that then was distributed to centers all over the country. But they've been vital resource during this because they were doing these weekly emails with like, here's like 50 different grants you consider applying to. Here's like all these resources. Here's all these, you know, networks and like ED circles and support circles for EDs to sit in a room together and like be like, oh my God, my center is going to close.
Right.
Give me ideas. And, you know, these kinds of lifelines have been vital during the process, but they just came out with their annual report, which would normally come out this time of year, but this year it came out during COVID and they did some COVID specific calculations. And I think if I remember, it's something like the LGBTQ nonprofit sector has seen a loss of over $10 million since COVID started. And that was as of June.
Right.
So I can only even imagine how much more has been lost. And unfortunately,
and will be
lost. And unfortunately, you know, we fall outside of all of these like CARE Acts and this act and Save the Stages and all this. Like, I was recently told the center doesn't qualify for arts funding. Like we've paid out more money to artists in Connecticut than any arts organization other than like the Arts Council.
Right.
And yet we don't qualify as serving artists. And so we get left out of all these funds, but what we do is like instrumentally vital, especially now. And, you know, I think in a way COVID is going to be the best argument for what the importance of community centers are and community spaces are.
So, we need to get you in front of some senators is what you're saying.
So let me ask you, Patrick, so you guys are you've been launching virtual content for the better part since March, mm-hmm. right? Since you guys initially closed your doors, you pivoted quickly. You've been doing online content. You're working on some amazing stuff that's coming up, and we definitely want to touch on that. But I wanted to talk a little bit about how much harder amid COVID has it been to reach out to local organizations or local companies that were dumping money and providing money into centers? How much harder has it been? How do you think COVID has impacted your ability to get money from local community like corporations that are in town for you?
Very hard. We essentially lost almost our entire line of corporate support for 2020 because of when COVID hit and when shutdowns happened. The center raised all of our corporate sponsorships between April and July.
Right.
And we just couldn't ask people for money this year. And the few that I asked, most of them said they just couldn't do it this year or they didn't have the money, or the bigger problem, which is programming during COVID, I can't program more than 2 weeks out because I don't know what the world is going to look like in 2 weeks, especially with federal level leadership that's basically ignoring the problem. And so when I go to create Pride, like, we were still like, do we do virtual? Do we do in person? Do we do a virtual? Do we in person? Are we going to get a permit? Are we not going to get a permit? When we did Pride in person in October, we didn't get our permit until 4 p.m. the Friday before.
Wow.
And so we literally, in 48 hours, did everything that we do in 4 months. We booked over 100 performers to perform, confirmed all their times, figured out how they were going to get there. We booked a stage. We rented all the tents we needed. We got all the permits. We got everything in 24 hours. It was insane. And that's how we have to program. That is not how you raise money, right? You can't go to a Bank of America or a whoever and be like, hey, we're going to do this thing, maybe. Do you want to give us that $5,000 you normally give us?
Right.
And so that just hasn't happened. So with the exception of our very specific relationships, oftentimes that are more tied to foundation style giving, like Avangrid Foundation, for example, was immediate. There was like no question that they were going to support what we were doing. But that's because it was coming from that foundation side of a relationship where they understand that philanthropy, especially right now, is super important and that they have to just be flexible. They right. get it, right?
Look at corporations, they're shifting their money right now. Right. I mean, they're not necessarily giving the way they used to. Foundations are, yes, because they have to. They have a certain amount they have to give every year. But the reality is corporations are saying, hey, we need to put everything on hold because we don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
Right. And I get it. And that's why even with our hyper-local corporate relationships, some of them I just didn't even ask because I knew that I was going to put them in a position where they were like, it's like for me to make, there was this level of for me to make that sponsor uncomfortable for $1,000. It's not worth it in the long-term relationship. I'd rather like give them space and then come at to them. I'm actually getting ready to do all of our corporate communications now for next year and say, listen, we didn't ask you this year because we know you're hurting just as much as we are, but we need you to commit to support us next year because none of us know what the world's going to be like. And the center is a vital resource. And here's why. And here's what we've done over the last 9 months. That's how we're going to go out to and talk to these people. And 99% of them are good people that want to give us money. They just either can't, or somebody above them is telling them they don't have the budget anymore or whatever. And so I don't blame them for being scared. And again, I mean, when you're like, when a tweet can make the entire economy crash, it's very hard as a business, especially a big corporation, to be responsive in an age where literally nobody knows what's going on.
Right.
I totally want to dive into Trans Awareness Week and your programming around it. And I also want to talk about AIDS Awareness Day. Is that, am I saying that right? World AIDS Day.
Observation.
Yeah. But first I want to talk about just when we're talking about, because we're talking about fundraising and giving money. Like, what is your impact? Like, when you look at Connecticut and if you were to sit in front of somebody and say, look at all of this that we've done, look at all these people that we're helping and affecting, like, what is the Pride Center's impact, not only in New Haven?
So we gave out 65,000 pounds of free food to close to 300 households over the course of 17 weeks. This was, each box was about 50 to 60 pounds of healthy food. Each box had between 6 and 7 vegetables, 4 or 5 different fresh fruits. More than 50% of the box was fresh and available, and all this was available for free. So that's one impact. Like I said before, we've given out over $35,000 to LGBTQ artist speakers in Connecticut since the start of COVID. Close to 80% of those were BIPOC artists and speakers that were LGBTQ+. We have produced, I think we're up to like 150 virtual events since March. That includes Pride New Haven Virtual, which had 25 events in itself.
Wow.
We also did our Week of Action in June, which was kind of like a activist-focused Pride celebration, where we did like another 12 or 14 events, plus all of the other virtual content we created. So we've been doing that kind of stuff. We've also been doing, each week we do, 25 hours of virtual case management approximately. And that's helping people doing anything from SNAP benefits to unemployment, looking for housing, mental health resources and referrals, and also helping with medical referrals, because guess what? People still have medical needs during a pandemic. And if you're in the middle of your transition, you still need things like your shots every day.
Right. and you guys started doing the case management work well before like COVID really hit. You
Our guys director of case management started on February 2nd.
And then so, in March, it closed. Because you were planning this, and then it just hit.
And you're doing all of this with how many employees?
So so we have, so by the end of November, we will have 5 full-time employees, because we're hiring one more employee, and 4 part-time employees, plus we have a contract employee who does our accounting for us.
So, two years ago, I remember you were on the show, and I said to you, you were the only employee at the Pride Center.
Yep.
Right? The only one paid employee at the Pride Center, and thanks to a grant that you got from the city of New Haven. And I said to you, you're going to do great things for this center. And I stand by my words, because what you guys are doing seriously are it is incredible. And I'm very proud of you, and I'm proud of your staff and the work that you guys are pumping. Let's talk about what programming you have for these landmark like days and weeks that we have coming up, that for us are always those very like touchstone moments in our community. And for example, you know, World AIDS Day and Trans Awareness Week, the Trans Day of Remembrance. What do you have lined up for us?
So we got a lot going on. So we, for TDOR or Trans Day of Remembrance, we every year do about a week. We do a week, or usually it's 6 to 7 days. It varies. This year it's 6 days of programming called Trans Awareness Week, where we really try to create opportunities for the trans community to come together, create space together, but also for other people to engage and either learn what they may not know. For example, we've done things like pronoun workshops, but also like actually listen to the community. So this year, Trans Awareness Week has, I want to say, 17 different events. All but 2 are virtual. And one of the 2 that are not virtual will be still streamed virtually. That will include a fabulous celebrating trans artists program, where we're going to be presenting 10 to 12 different trans artists, showcasing their art virtually on Twitch TV, which is where we do a lot of our performance-based programming, because then we don't get shut down by the Facebook police. we'll have like a dozen different panels and conversations, everything from a panel with BIPOC queer women, a panel on trans health equity, what are some of the other ones? My brain's not working. All those things and more. Go to newhavenpridecenter.org/TDOR, TDOR, and you can see the whole schedule. But of course, the crowning moment of the week is our vigil that we do every year. We will be doing that in person on the New Haven Green and be streaming it live. It's really important that we recognize that day this year, because despite the fact that we've had record-breaking years every year for the last like 5 or 6 years, this year's is even higher, and even higher by a lot. And it was something, as I was updating the wall of remembrance that we keep on our website of all the trans people who've been murdered, I had this moment today where I really got really upset. Because when you think about the fact that anywhere between 50 and 70% of the country has been locked in their homes for probably at least 50% of the time since March, we still somehow managed to murder more trans people. And it takes a lot of hate to be able to murder people who are not even out in public.
Yeah.
And that doesn't take into consideration any of the people who might have committed suicide, who might have been misgendered and we don't know who they are. Because they literally, I mean, it happened the other day. So Connecticut lost one of our trans leaders last week, Jerry Marie. She literally founded everything trans in this state in the 90s. She founded the organization that went on to become Trans Advocacy Coalition. She was very involved in the socialist movement of Queers Without Borders, and literally founded what became a big chunk of the activist trans community as we know it today, in the 80s and 90s. And she lost her battle with cancer last week. And the first thing that happened was in her obituary, they misgendered her repeatedly and used he pronouns for her repeatedly. This is someone who's been trans for 30 plus years right. in Connecticut and is one of the most influential trans members of our history and is being misgendered in her obituary.
Do you think that her family had something to do with that? Like that's the way they wanted to.
I don't know. I imagine that the family was probably involved because it looked like, because this was an obituary that was on one of those like remembering the person pages.
Right.
And it's just like, when you think about that can happen to someone like Jerry Marie, like how many people is that happening to across this country whose names you will never know who they are.
Right.
And that's why it's super important that we do the vigil every year and we are doing it in person and we will be streaming it live so that you can participate from anywhere. Regardless of how you feel about being in public right now. So that's Trans Awareness Week. And then like 5 days later, we are doing...
You're not busy.
We're doing World AIDS Day Observation, which is a partnership between the New Haven Pride Center, the New Haven Mayor's Task Force on AIDS, and the Guardian Health Association. And we commissioned Noah Smith to compose a new musical landscape to a poem called Night Sweats that was written in 1991 by Alex Garbera, who's one of Connecticut's oldest living individuals with HIV. He's been HIV positive since 1982 and is still with us. And he wrote this poem kind of at the apex of his kind of experience of HIV at the time in the 90s where people started dying in big numbers again. It was kind of the second wave. And so it's kind of a dark piece, but the music is incredible. And I call it a musical landscape because it's not just a composition. With it is dance and projection and graphic design all melded into one. It's going to be this amazing multimedia performance program that we're going to world premiere on World AIDS Day virtually for free. Anybody anywhere in the world can watch it. And it features dance by Arian Wilkerson, who is a phenomenal non-binary Black HIV positive dancer and choreographer from the Hartford area. They've been recognized internationally for their dancing and their choreography. Their work is phenomenal. And I still can't believe that we got them to do this piece. And so it's gonna stream live. And then that's kind of our centerpiece to the World AIDS Day celebration. But surrounding that is a series of panels and programs, an art exhibit, virtual art exhibit at the center featuring the works of HIV positive artists. And it's really just going to be this phenomenal moment for the art world. Mm-hmm. Very little art has actually been commissioned by HIV positive artists to tell the stories of HIV people, positive people. Oftentimes the works that we think of were written in the 80s and the 90s, and there's very little new work being created, and there's almost no musical work being created. And so we really wanted to invest in this commission. The center has kind of become a commissioner. We commission a piece of art every year. Last year we did Trans Bodies with Elm City Dance Collective. The year before that we commissioned a special version of Luis Antonio's Escapada, A Night of Unusual Experiences. Mm-hmm. And it's become a major piece of what we do. And we're really honored to be working with the community in this way to create this piece.
And we're definitely going to make sure to post both the trans awareness link on our post tonight,
all
as well as the World's AIDS World's Aid Day information. But I wanted to end this with the fact that a lot of these programs are free. The New Haven Pride Center is a nonprofit nonprofit organization, and we do have some sort of exciting news about the capacity building match. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that.
Yes, I was. I was hoping you would give me the window. Oh, I also want to give a shout out to Nick, who's on our board and awesome. And it's not necessarily public knowledge yet, but everybody should know Nick is also one of the co-chairs of our 25th anniversary, which is next year. So we roped him into all kinds of work that he's not prepared for, probably, but he'll be amazing at.
It's public so now.
Excited. Can't back away now. I said it on in the press.
Yeah.
So we have been very fortunate. So I hate grant writing. I had never written a grant before I came to the Pride Center. And somehow I've managed to raise literally hundreds of thousands of dollars in grants. And that's true during COVID. We've been very fortunate. We've gotten some incredible grants, including a very large grant from Yale University and COVID Relief Fund, and from the Community Foundation of Greater New Haven's Relief Fund. But we also got a $25,000 national competitive grant. It's the second year that we've gotten this grant. It's for community centers that are in a very specific budget range. And it's super, super competitive. Last year, we got $50,000, which allowed us to hire two staff members. And this year, we got $25,000, which they're allowing us to do as a match. And this will allow us to hire our grant writer, who's starting later this month. So right now, between now and December 31st, if you go to newhavenpridecenter.org and click donate, your donation is matched one-to-one. So every dollar becomes two, every $10 becomes 20, and every $1,000 becomes $2,000, if you're that generous.
I also think it's really important to note that you are one of eight organizations nationally that have received this money from this foundation. And that is that is saying something about the work that you're doing.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible to like write this grant and get it. We applied for this grant originally 3 years ago, and we didn't make it to the second round. And we didn't make it to the second round under the guise that it was believed by the committee that Connecticut didn't need the money. And so when I went in the second time around and explained to them more in the grant application, the landscape of Connecticut's funding and how the challenges that we faced as queer organizations operating in a state where there is not a single dollar in our state line items or in any foundation anywhere in the state dedicated to queer people, it's very challenging. And that changed their perspective to understand that, yes, there are people in places like Alabama that are up against obstacles that we do not understand in Connecticut. I also don't like playing the like my pain is worse than your pain Olympics, because that doesn't get us anywhere.
Right.
The reality is that yes, we are worthy of this investment, and yes, Connecticut does need this money. We are not just sitting here as a blue state where everything is hunky dory.
It's not all peaches and creams here. Trust me.
No, it is not.
I've lived in this state almost all my life, and I know how challenging it can be to be a queer person running around in cities like New Haven, Bridgeport, and Hartford. Not to mention the outskirts and some of these other cities, for example, like Waterbury, or even the urban outer areas where, you know,
there's
homophobia
nothing.
Could be really, really rampant and bad.
And we all know she ran around.
I did. Be nice now. Be nice. We're talking about good stuff right now.
I know. I'm sorry.
Hey, running around can be good stuff.
Hey, listen, yeah, I own it. I grab it by the balls and just, ride it to town.
Well, hopefully you can grab it by the balls carefully, because you don't want to hurt anybody.
Exactly. So, Patrick, aside from these upcoming programs, what do you think, just hypothetically speaking, is the first thing that you're going to do when we reopen from COVID?
Oh, God.
Shall we throw a party and hug everybody?
Oh, that's such a loaded question. I'm going to do this. I'm going to be super mysterious now, because I can't actually publicly say what I want to say. My hope is that by next November, we can have an in-person event, because we have something that's super important that's happening, and we want to be able to celebrate it with the community in person.
That would be amazing. And we'll take that suspense, and we'll hang on to it. And then when it comes next November, remember that, we'll run with it.
Exactly. And until then, you can continue watching us virtually. I will say that we're in the midst of budgeting right now, which is, joyous. And right now, assuming the board, Nick, this is directed at you.
Yeah, I know.
Assuming the board approves the budget that I'm presenting them, you know, we're going to be having 5 to 6 to 10 virtual events a month. And then we're going to have these massive virtual programs every 3 months. Mm-hmm. We're getting ready in January. We're going to start having exhibits in 3 different cities across the state. We're going to be doing all kinds of things that, you know, just aren't happening any other place. And continue to check in, because you can be anywhere in the world and participate in the New Haven Pride Center right now.
Right. That's amazing.
And I'm committed to continuing that participation once we can be in person, because we have committed that we will continue to have all of our stuff available virtually so that people can continue to engage no matter where they are.
Wow. I have to say, Patrick, congratulations to you and your team and your board.
Oh, thank you.
you guys really have really been fighting the good fight amidst one of the most challenging times that we in our lifetimes have experienced, because COVID really has been something that really threw a wrench in everything that that we had planned.
Yeah,
right.
In life in general.
So, but can I also just say that, like, thanks to you all, because. Like, thanks to you all on so many fronts, but thanks to you all on 2 very specific fronts. One, thank you for everything you do to amplify the voice of what the center is doing and how our community is doing amazing things in Connecticut. Like, literally from the moment that I came to the center, you all have been there repeatedly propping up our work and making sure people know about it. But also the power that you all are continuing to do Gay Talk 2.0 during COVID, the power that has, that kind of 2 hour of joy that you're bringing at least one person and probably hundreds and hundreds of persons a week is, like, not measurable. And, like, you all need to own that joy, because you are doing the same work that we're doing at this Pride Center in your own way. And listen, homophobia, transphobia, and biphobia, those things happen when people are alone. When we're a community, they cannot take us down. You know, Jose Zaria, who was the first queer person to run for public office in the United States, queer Latin drag queen in the 1950s who ran for public office, said, you know, divided they can conquer us, one by one, together we're stronger. And that's, you're creating that community virtually, even if you don't realize it. And so I just want to say thank you to you all for continuing to do this every week. Yep. Because even if all it does is make someone laugh for an hour, it's still taking them away from the reality that is stressful and scary. Yep. So.
Thanks,
well, we certainly appreciate all those kind words, and we love you for it.
And I'm not just blowing smoke up your ass. I mean it.
I'm on the board now, so I mean, must mean it.
It's smoky here. So, darling, before we let you go, I'm sure that you're a very busy man, or you want to get back to your quarantine boyfriend.
Sure. I have to cook him dinner. I have everything sitting here waiting to get cooked.
Yes. I see something on there. Is that like a little pie or something you got to throw in the oven?
I'm doing tortellini with a Alfredo sauce, and there was supposed to be salmon, but I unfortunately bought it too many days ago and it didn't smell right.
That's like me, right?
I mean, it's a little pungent.
Throw it out.
So
it probably was fine, but you know, I don't want to risk it because that's not cute.
Oh my God, it's so funny, but so true.
Before we let you go, I would like for you to take an opportunity to, one, plug yourself so people don't know how they can get in contact with you, and also obviously plug the Pride Center websites, Facebook, all of the good places, including those other places that don't censor us, like Facebook.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
So you can visit the website for the New Haven Pride Center at newhavenpridecenter.org. All of our social media is basically at New Haven Pride Center, except on Twitter, we're New Haven Pride, because center was too many characters. You know, they like to limit things there. But we are on Facebook, we're on YouTube, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we are on Twitch TV. Most of our youth programming ends up on Twitch TV. So if you are a youth looking for something cool, including things like youth-focused drag shows, Drag Queen Story Hour, And youth talking about issues that are pertain to queer youth. All of that happens on our Twitch TV. You can also go to our YouTube, and actually, if you just go to youtube.com and search New Haven Pride Center, you can catch our whole library of all of our virtual programming that's been happening since COVID. Many of it is ASL interpreted, and we are moving forward. All of our programming will be ASL interpreted to make it super accessible to the community. And yeah, I'm available if you email me at pdunn@newhavenpridecenter.org, or you can always hit me up on Facebook. My name is Patrick Dunn, and because we elected a new president, I finally have a face picture on Facebook again because I haven't had one for 4 years.
I noticed that. So that's amazing. Thank you. Thank you for letting us know how we can get a hold of you. We are all so ecstatic of the fact that we have a new president. And
so I think
that as a result of that, a lot of good things will come our way now.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we need to hold Biden and Harris super, you know, we have to hold them accountable every step of the way for the next 4 years. But can I tell you how exciting it is for the first time in 4 years to be on the offensive side of policymaking instead of the defensive side, right, and not have to worry about like what tweet is going to take away what right today, but actually like focus on actual policy and actual change. I also just want to give a shout out that like, I understand that there are some activists that are very frustrated with the way things are and that this is not the ticket they wanted. And I appreciate that. And I agree with them in a lot of ways because this is not the ticket I wanted, but there is power in this moment. And, right, and we need to all collectively stop and appreciate the immense power of the first biracial woman as vice president, the first, what will be, I am certain, a series of firsts over the next 3 months as transition team members and secretaries are announced. And regardless of like how we feel about the ticket compared to their history and what they've done, I think we are in a place where we can now move forward, right, and actually change some of the very dangerous policies that were put in place over the last 4 years. And in some cases over the last 25 years, because there are plenty of things from every president, Republican and Democrat alike, over the last 25 years that we still need to change. Listen, we still, none of the four of us can still donate blood.
Right.
Mm-hmm. None of the four of us can still do so many things in this country. And we are the most privileged of the LGBTQ plus spectrum. And that's, and so like, there's so much work to be done. And as I said to one of the newspapers that called me after the election was called, is like, it doesn't matter who's in charge. There's work to do because we're fighting for equality and we are so far from equality, like we can't see it yet. So it, but we can still appreciate the moment right now and what it means, especially to Black queer women who put their bodies on lines, organizing Black Lives Matter and so many other incredible causes that allow them space to celebrate this moment.
And to come out in record numbers and allow this ticket to actually be successful.
Exactly.
So Patrick, one more thing before I let you go. One of our listeners, viewers, actually wanted me to remind you to check your batteries in your fire alarms because they're beeping. That's dangerous.
Oh, yeah. My fire alarm. Yeah. It's been doing that since I moved in. Like 3 years ago. It drives my boyfriend crazy.
It's time to change the batteries.
I think both my fire alarms are now out.
Oh, God.
They're like at each other.
I shit you not. I got a text message. Tell your boy to change his batteries.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure they're both dead because I think they chirp at each other now and like have whole conversations.
Oh my God. Oh my PM God. Me your address. I'll send you a gift, a pack of batteries.
All right.
Well, my dear, you know we love you. We have nothing but love and respect for the work that you do for our communities. And I want to thank you for joining us on today's episode. Truly, it's been amazing.
It's been amazing being here. I miss you all and hope to see all of you in some form of reality at some point in the near future.
Big party. Yes. Big party.
Big party.
Yes.
Big socially distant responsible party.
With masks.
Well, my dear, thanks again. We love you.
Love you too. Good night, y'all.
Bye.
Well, ladies and gents, that, of course, was the amazing Patrick Dunn, the executive director of the New Haven Pride Center. He is just, you know, I'm really proud. I'm really proud of the work that we have done over the past, you know, 4 or 5 years in New Haven, fostering a really good, safe space for LGBTQ peoples.
I just find it so funny that, like, what was it, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I, like, went on a rant
right
about the Pride Center, and now I'm on the freaking board.
Right.
Irony.
The first year is like, I was like, oh God, there she goes. All right, well, listen, amazing conversation. Like we said before, we're going to post a lot of stuff, all of the things that we talked about, all the programs that are coming up, special events, they'll be on tonight's post on our website, ktalk20.com. But we do have a couple of more things that we wanted to cover before we decide to bring it home. And so, whose story was this in Nevada?
It's Chris's, and make it quick, honey.
Oh, she nasty.
No, go for it. You took it away from me last time.
I didn't even read it.
Well, you did. No, it's...
I did not.
Well, it was going to be in Mama Kim's Minute, I believe. Right. I believe Mama Kim sent this to us, but I had seen it when I was looking across the Advocate. Nevada actually became the first state to protect same-sex marriage constitutionally. So... On the Tuesday's election, voters repealed a 2002 amendment that had defined marriage as between one man and one woman. So it goes on to say, quote, marriage would be defined as between couples, regardless of gender, though religious organizations and clergy persons would have the right to refuse solemnize a marriage. So in the vote on the ballot in Nevada, it was reported that 61.2%, a total of 691,661 voters supported the new definition of marriage versus a mere 38.8%, with 75% of those votes now being reported. So that's a big referendum.
So why are they saying that? Hold on, time out. In this article, they're also saying that the future of it is in doubt after the formation of a 6-3 conservative majority.
Well, because if Justice Alito and Justice Thomas have come out saying that they would like to
over... But a state constitution is different from the
federal. No, because if Hodges...
versus Obergefell.
Obergefell were to be repealed or overturned in the Supreme Court, that just what that states is marriage equality is the law of the land across the nation. If that were to be ever overturned, Nevada's constitution
protects
marriage equality for those married in that state.
Within that state, but within that state. Recognized nationally.
Well, I mean, it could be recognized. Certain states could not recognize it, yes. Right. But Nevada was the first state to put that on the ballot to ensure that no matter what happens on the federal level.
But it doesn't surprise me that Nevada would be one of those first states, right? Like California, we always say California is one of those states that often does things first. But it doesn't surprise me because when you think about how liberal Nevada really is, Nevada is one of the only states where it's legal to have a profession as a sex worker, mm-hmm. right? And I'm not going to say prostitute or any of the other, you know, derogatory things that people call sex workers. It's a sex worker and it's a real profession that people can have and make money at. And there's no shame in. And so when you think about the fact that not only are they the gambling capital of the world, I think they are.
Yeah.
They're also, you know, one of those states in where there's a lot of professions that are legal that are really frowned upon in other areas of our nation. So it doesn't surprise me at all.
But it's interesting also that you bring up California because, yeah, while they might be the first in many things that are social achievements, they're also the first in some terrible things. I mean, you look at DOMA, you look at the 2008.
Well, DOMA was a constitutional thing in our constitution, right?
The Defense of Marriage Act was overturned
as a result of the cases that were brought to the Supreme Court by.
But even California in 2008 was
Prop 8 was overturned.
Exactly,
that's what it was.
Right, and yeah, like California, yeah, it's a pillar in making change, but at the same time, they're also at the start of some terrible bills.
Agreed.
So I'm just going to fact check you guys real quick because Nevada is not the gambling capital of the world.
Okay. Of course, I knew she was going to do this, but go.
It's the gambling capital of the United States.
Is it Monte Carlo?
Well, for us. Then what is it?
It's Macau.
Okay. Well, it's the gambling capital of the United States. I stand corrected, Miss Trish.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else would you like to correct today?
No, that was it.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So,
or Monte Carlo. Yes, it's Monte Carlo.
Thank you. All right. Well, let's jump into Mama Kim's Minute and bring it home. So I'm going to toss it over to you, Trish.
All right. Let me find it because I was fact checking. Because
she was fact checking. She's worse than freaking CNN.
Oh, my God. Somebody's got to do it. Anyway, so Mama Kim's Minute, everybody. So number one, 8 reasons Pete Buttigieg would be the best White House press secretary.
Oh. Check out that link because so many great things.
I want him to be somewhere. I want to see him every day.
Yeah, you're going to.
Number two, black gay couple embraced by family in heartwarming Etsy ad. Number three, Apple finally has trans flag and trans symbol emojis.
About time.
Thank you. Remember the rainbow flag?
Still, oh, honey, she lost her shit.
It was still me. Right. I did it. Emailed them every day. Number four, how this gay couple honored their ancestors at their Brooklyn wedding. Thank you, Mama Kim. That's Mama Kim's Minute, everybody.
Right. Those stories, those links will be available also on tonight's show, so you can click on them. Tonight's show notes so that you can click on them and read them for yourselves. That's why we highlight these stories, not for us to cover them, but for you to have an alternate source of reading. Mm-hmm. Our gay talk term.
Yeah. All right, everybody. So your gay talk term, of course, brought to you by
GayRealEstate.com.
Is goose.
Goose.
Goose. Goose. So goose is,
I love it,
playful poking finger or fingers into another's ass or pinching the ass. Did you get your Christmas goose yet?
Oh, so it's like going to Dr. G's office. You get a Christmas goose every single time you go visit.
I hope so.
Oh, God. I mean, that's awesome.
He did.
I did.
You did.
You got his goose.
I got goose.
You
got his goose.
You hear that, darling? Yo, man, got goose.
Don't listen to them.
We've got a secret guest sitting in the other side over there.
And so. The hair is making my life right now.
Seriously. It's like a little... I wish I could turn the camera, but I won't do that to you. Anyway, Christopher, on this day.
Yes, on this day in gay history, brought to you, of course, by
GayRealEstate.com.
When November 9th, 2016, in the state of Oregon, Kate Brown becomes Oregon's first openly LGBT governor. Kate Brown is elected as Oregon's first openly LGBT governor after winning the gubernatorial election. She is also the first openly...
is using big words.
I love that word.
Say it one more time.
I'm going to, if you would let me finish the next sentence I started, because it's in that sentence. All right. As I was saying before I was rudely interrupted, not the first time on today's episode, she is also the first openly LGBT individual to win the gubernatorial election, making her the highest ranking openly LGBT individual in the United States of America.
Right. And none other in the state of Oregon. Of
That's course. Right. Gubernatorial.
Gubernatorial.
3 times.
All right. Well, let me try and see if I can fuck anything up now. All right, ladies and gents, I want to thank you.
I have faith in you. You can, Tom.
I want to thank you all for joining us on today's show. Having Patrick was just absolutely incredible. If you love our show, make sure that you go subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting service. Doing so allows you to get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your web browser or your device, your favorite device, as soon as our episodes are published. You can also support us on Patreon. As a Patreon supporter, you can donate money to our show, which we collect monthly, can be in any denomination of a dollar or more, and we are certainly appreciative of the fact that you want to help.
Just like the runoff in Georgia.
That's
any
right.
Any denomination of a dollar or more.
We'll take it all. Mm-hmm. Chris?
Oh, my turn. So next week, we welcome In Good Company, a podcast for when life goes off script.
Right. So it's going to be a partnership for us to do. We're going to be helping.
Yep. So it's a theater, an LGBT-based theater that started a podcast during the COVID epidemic, and that's why it's called When Life Goes Off Script. We should all check it out and look forward to next week.
Right.
Next week, yeah.
It'll be exciting.
All right, so thank you to our guest, Patrick Dunn, the Executive Director of the New Haven Pride Center, for joining us on today's show. We are so excited about the amazing work that you and your staff are doing, and we are so proud Seriously. Of where you've come in the past couple of years. So thank you again. And everybody... Don't forget, get your discount for the Future Method today. Each time you clean out with water or enemas, delicate tissues are harmed and cells are damaged.
Increasing the bottom.
Increasing chances of injury and or STDs. The first of its kind, doctor-developed formula gently cleanses before you play without hurting your bum. And now you can use code GAYTALK20 for 20% off, valid for one purchase or one subscription per person.
That's amazing. And so that's what we were talking about with Dr. G was on last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Before the election episode. That's right. We did 2 episodes last week, and I'm just like,
I know, my
all
brain
over
was
the place.
Shot, yeah.
It's like 4.5 hours of broadcasting throughout the entire election mm-hmm. night. It was intense. But yeah, it's great product. Make sure that, you know, you just do
And check out
there.
The butt scrub.
Oh, Did you get your sample yet?
I haven't yet.
Dr. G. All right, Chris?
Well, even though we're all cleaned up down there, we're going to still go ahead and put a rubber on it.
I appreciate it.
So,
thank you.
So, as always, ladies and gents and in-betweens and a Charles, as always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under audio podcast. Oh, we changed something there I didn't see.
Yeah, it's under... Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts.
Audio Podcasts. Yeah, there's some different things here.
That's on our website, Audio
okay.
Podcasts.
So I'm going to say it again. As always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under Audio Podcast. It is also available as a free download on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher Radio.
Right.
Those are new things for me.
Those services changed.
That screwed me up last
week. You would know if you were here for like the past 3 weeks, but you were dying somewhere. But we
exactly.
We forgive you.
All right, everybody. So Nick announces, you can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0 at gaytalk20.com.
All right. She got it. Yeah.
Too many changes.
Right.
I don't like change.
Is it my turn now? All right. Well, if you need to reach out to us, just head on over to our
website. Tom, take it away.
Thank you. See, I was waiting for the cue. Head on over to our website. Click on the Contact Us tab located at the top of your web browser. There you can leave comments, suggest topics, leave a question for the cast or an individual host. You can also call us with your question. Leave it on our voicemail. We might answer it for you on our live show. The phone number is 334-429-8255 or 324 334 Gay Talk. I hate you both. I really do. Oh, Lord. Also, don't forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. With that, ladies and gents, that is our show. Thank you, and y'all have a good night. Bye!
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more Dish.